There's something out here.
Only hell.
You think it's a UFO?
The next level of the Jordan Peele experience arrives.
Yeah, nah. Run!
I don't think they think you. Yeah. Keep you on lookout.
No.
Don't look.
Yeah. It's not what you think.
Nope.
Written and directed by Jordan Peele. In cinemas now.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris and I'm joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnayar. We are taking a look at the English Championship, a preview of the 2022-23 season. This is part two of a two-part podcast. Yesterday we went through a good 40 minutes of analysis in regards to this league. And here we go with about 40 minutes more, diving deep into not just the teams themselves and a preview of the clubs and season, but also some of the talking points, some of the players, some of the history, and also towards the end, some of the viewing options and actually recommendations on how best to experience the English Championship, whether you're a veteran viewer of that league or those clubs, or someone new and learning, wanting to learn more about how to watch this league. It's a fun one for sure. So here we go with Kartik and I talking about the Championship. Now, Kartik, looking at some of these other teams here, what about Sunderland? Sunderland till I die, right? They're back in the Championship. What's your consensus in terms of the level of optimism or anticipation about Sunderland?
Yeah, so after Alex Neil took over, and he's a manager who got Norwich, obviously, out of this division and into the Premier League. They were, I think, pretty good, efficient, pragmatic. They weren't spectacular in terms of the way they played football, but they were efficient in League Two, got themselves into the playoffs and got out of the playoffs. Maybe a little fortunately in that final against High Wycombe, against Wycombe Wanderers, but they were very, very well organized and very, very well structured. They've got a small squad, and that's something that they're going to have to contend with. But I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to be mid-table. I mean, Lyndon Gooch, who is a U.S. international or former U.S. international, right? He's been off the radar for the last few years. He wears the number 11 shirt, or at least did last season at Sunderland. He's a very, very good player at this level, and obviously a player Jurgen Klinsmann liked, right? Capped a couple times, a guy to watch if you're interested in American players. Another guy I really like at Sunderland is Alex Pritchard, who is a kind of silky midfielder who plays out wide as well. So I think they have enough to stay in the division. I don't think they're going to get relegated, which I know is controversial. There are a lot of people who are saying they have a small squad. They haven't really invested in it. They've had ownership difficulty, as we know, the last couple of years, which is why they had this elongated period in the third tier. So they're going to go right back down. But I think they're going to be okay. I have enough faith in the manager more than anything.
One of the other things I love about the Championship so much, Kartik, is that the talent spotting. Oftentimes, now and again, watching a bunch of games from the Championship, like a player jumps out. You're like, wow, oh my God, that player has talent. You can see that player has something special there. And oftentimes they do get signed by a Premier League club. And you get an opportunity to watch them from the August until December timeframe and see how he advances or kind of grows as a player. And then the January transfer window gets signed up by, I don't know, Crystal Palace or West Ham United or whoever it may be. That to me is always intriguing too, because it's a great opportunity to see talent in its rawness before they make it to the even bigger time.
And also the loan system, because let me just give one very big example with me, which was Mason Mount a couple of years ago. There are all these U.S. national team fans who seem to think I have this pro-Mount bias because I don't like Christian Pulisic and it's some anti-American thing. I get that. I get hit with that a lot on Twitter still 4 years later, which is really annoying. The bottom line on Mount is I saw him at Derby when he was on loan at Derby, and it was like, this guy not only is too good for this level, this guy is actually – now this is a historical stereotype. This guy's too good to be English. He looks like he's a German midfielder or a Spanish midfielder. I can't wait to see what he does when he goes back to Chelsea. Oh, yeah, I know Chelsea doesn't like to play young players. They see them as commodities. They generally keep loaning them out or sell them. Well, he broke into the first team for a reason. He's one of the first names on the England team sheet for a reason. He's the best player on Chelsea for a reason. So I spotted Mount when he was on loan at Derby and was blown away by the guy. And there are several other examples of that. And I would say last season, one of the talent spotting examples, Chris, was Brennan Johnson. I think by the time January rolled around, we had all pegged Brennan Johnson, who is a Welsh international who plays for Nottingham Forest, who emerged once Steve Cooper came in. As you said, they were at the foot of the table at the time, emerged as this just superstar player that many of us were thinking, okay, if a Premier League player really wants an instant impact guy who maybe can come off the bench and give them 10 or 15 minutes, maybe they buy Brennan Johnson in January. And then as it turns out, Forrest gets promoted, so they don't have to sell him in the summer, and he's still there. But there's always one or two guys every season, whether it's guys on loan. You mentioned Conor Gallagher a couple years ago. That's another really good shout when he was at Swansea. Or guys that are coming through championship clubs like Brennan Johnson last season at Forest.
Yeah, the one that jumps out at me that I noticed pretty early was David Brooks at Bournemouth, and just seeing the incredible skill that he had. And unfortunately, he got diagnosed with Stage 2 Hodgkin lymphoma, and has been treated for that illness. But a player that really, really just, like, every time I saw him play, I would tune in just to watch him play, no matter who Bournemouth was playing. That's the thing that's a little bit different about this championship season, Kartik, is normally during a championship season, you have some major clubs in there, some big clubs. You have maybe Newcastle United or Aston Villa or Leeds United or some major clubs who are playing in massive stadiums. But this season, Sunderland, you could say, right? Sunderland's definitely kind of...
Yeah. They have... I mean, their stadium was massive. It's massive even in the championship, let alone in League One. But with that exception, yeah. I mean, basically, you still have Sheffield United in the division,
right?
We're fairly large stadium, hosting a Euro semifinal. Depends when people listen to this whether that semifinal would have happened yet. Women's Euro semifinal at Bramall Lane. But yeah, you're right, Chris. This is the first season in a while that we haven't had one of those clubs in the championship, right? A Villa, a Leeds, a Newcastle, that sort of massive, massive club that draws attention. We were very close to having Leeds back in the championship, and we very well could have them back in the championship real soon. But yeah, this is the first time where you've got kind of like maybe a proper championship season, if you will, in a way.
Yeah, I think it's more balanced in many ways, which makes it more exciting. I mean, it's not like you have I don't know, Wolverhampton Wanderers playing in front of a stadium of 50,000 capacity with, you mean, I don't know, 30,000 fans. But that's the other part of it too, Kartik, watching the championship. Definitely, in some of these games, the atmosphere is incredible in terms of you hear different types of songs and chanting that you don't hear in the Premier League. For the most part in the Premier League, and I love the Premier League, but a lot of the songs you hear singing and the chants you hear singing are the same songs at the same at the different clubs in the championship, right?
Right. Yeah.
At the championship, it's definitely a lot more variety in terms of the type of songs, whether it's Swansea City's fans singing Hymn of Arias or Sheffield United singing what's the song about chips? Oh gosh, I don't know if you know this one, but Chip and Buddies or Chip Buddies. There's some really funny songs.
There's going to be some variety in the Premier League this year with Forest coming up. They sing a number of different songs, and actually even their kind of pop or rock hymn that you would associate with the club is Mull of Kintyre, which is certainly very different than hearing Hey Jude, although it's the same. It's both Paul McCartney, right? One, yep, with the Beatles, one with Wings, but very different than hearing Hey Jude blaring out in, I think, half the Premier League stadiums. So that's going to be kind of cool, but we'll save that for the Premier League conversations we have in future podcasts.
All right, 10 teams to go, Kartik. Let's go through these. Reading, is an interesting one, I think, because Reading is still under an embargo, a transfer embargo. So it's a slightly soft embargo in that they're restricted to signing loan players and free transfers. Reading's gone through a lot of financial issues in terms of overspending, massive debt. It's one of my picks to get relegated. Do you think they'll probably go down, Kartik, or is there a way for them to rise above that that transfer? The relegation zone.
Yeah, I think they probably will go down. Paul Ince did a really credible job last season after coming in, saved them really, and they had a points deduction they had to overcome as well. And he's used his network of pedigree in the game to get some guys that I don't know if they're going to be up for a championship relegation fight, but certainly their names, right? So he brings his son to the club, a guy that has played a lot in the championship and in various places, and Tom Ince. Jeff Hendrick is coming in on loan. Obviously, top player in the Premier League for a number of years with Burnley and Newcastle. Shane Long will be coming in as well, who was a fantastic striker in his day, but he was really dependent on pace, right? Long, he was one of the fastest guys, paciest players, I think, in the Premier League in his time, most recently with Southampton. So I think he's lost that step, so I don't know how good he's going to be. Sam Hutchison, another guy they're bringing in. So he's using his knowledge of other clubs and the game to get some veterans in. And we saw last season with Derby, even though they went down because of that points deduction, their most consistently good players were Tom Lawrence and Curtis Davies, two hardened veterans who Wayne Rooney were able to get incredible performances out, maybe last-ditch performances in their career to try and save Derby County. So I think Paul Ince taking very much the same playbook as Rooney did, thinking, okay, I got the same spending restrictions he had. Let me go get some veterans. Maybe I won't have the 21-point deduction that he had, and I can keep this team up. So I think they'll probably go down, but I think they have a fighting chance.
Yeah, that's a good point too, Kartik, because last season Reading signed Andy Carroll, who actually did pretty well for them. He has since moved on. He's no longer at the club at Reading, but actually did get some much-needed points towards the end of the last season when they needed the points to really kind of stay safe there. But yeah, I just don't think they've got enough to stay up this season. Another team that I think will go down, unfortunately, is Rotherham. Newly promoted from League One, the Yorkshire side, I just don't see having enough talent or finances available to really stay up this season. Do you agree, Kartik?
Yeah, I agree, and that's their business model, right? They're a yo-yo club, and they'll probably be back up in a few years or in a year. One player that I watch at Rotherham is Shane Ferguson, who started his career as a promising striker. Remember, in the Newcastle system, has become a pretty solid defender in lower division football. So sometimes players evolve and they find their niche and they find their position, and he's an example of that.
One of the big clubs we haven't really mentioned much about so far is Sheffield United. You mean they have a different manager? Chris Wilder obviously is not there any longer. They were recently in the Premier League a couple of years ago. What's your level of optimism about Sheffield United, Kartik?
Well, first off, Paul Heckenbottom, who had never gotten a chance really to manage without a lot of pressure, a first team. He did manage Leeds, as many remember, but was under intense pressure. Good English manager who's worked with youth players through much of his career, has waited his turn. I think he's done a really good job taking over a squad that was broken once they were relegated from the Premier League and Chris Wilder had left. And there were all kinds of intrigues within the football club. So I like this team. I think they have a really good chance of getting promoted. In fact, they're one of my picks to get promoted this year. And they were very close last season. They're going to bring Tommy Doyle back in on loan from Manchester City, a really promising young player. And they have in Oliver Norwood, John Fleck, and Stevens, a bunch of guys. I know I'm forgetting a few guys that have played in the Premier League and have played at a high level. And I got to ask you, since we're on Sheffield United, Wales goalkeeper situation for the World Cup, Chris. Are you with Adam Davies, or are you now back with Wayne Hennessy?
I think it has to be Wayne Hennessy. I mean, it's going to depend on between now and November, of course, in terms of form. But Wayne Hennessy, I think, with the experience that he has, I think, and some of his leadership abilities, I think, to me, he's my pick. But yeah, there's a bunch of players like that, too, that will be playing in the World Cup, right? This is a championship, but there's a bunch of players in the championship that will be playing that at that level, which is amazing to see. What's your take on Preston North End?
Yeah, I think they're going to have a pretty decent season. I think they're an outside shot to get into the playoffs. Ryan Lowe is their manager. They were really up and down last season, but they have some good pieces in their team. Alan Brown is a player I like a lot and is a full Ireland international. Of course, they didn't make the World Cup. Greg Cunningham is their left back, another Irish international who's, I think, solid. Matthew Olisunde is the American on that team. He has gotten a few caps, if I'm not mistaken, right, with the full national team. I think at some point he was capped. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy to watch who plays more or less as a right back but can play as a left back also. And he's a guy that also came through the Red Bull system before he went to Manchester United youth team. And I'm trying to remember, I believe he was capped at the full national team level, or at least was called in for a camp.
So one of the clubs in the championship that has probably the best shirt sponsor is Husky Chocolate, which is the sponsor of Millwall. Every time I see Millwall's kits and I see the Husky Chocolate, I'm like, that's cool. It makes me want to try a Husky Chocolate. I never tried it. It's probably really good, but we'll see. One of these days I'll try it when I get to England. But Millwall is a traditional English club, right? I mean, kind of old school football club, but these days still doing well in the championship. What's your take on Millwall, Kartik?
Yeah, Gary Rowett is a manager who I like, who has a lot of experience at this level. Big signing for them is getting Jamie Shackleton on loan from Leeds. Now, maybe Shackleton's a player I've overrated for years. Tidy, small midfielder who can play a lot of square passes, a lot like Harry Winks at Spurs or Tom Carroll before him, who you saw at Swansea for a while. Maybe also kind of limited the same way. Hasn't become the big star I thought he would. He was a guy I actually wanted Manchester City to pursue a few years ago, thinking this is a guy that would fit into a Pep team. So I like him going there. I think they have an outside shot at making the playoffs. They have a very tight squad. George Honeyman, another really good player, former Sunderland. But I think maybe they're not deep enough to absorb this 46-match season. And I think one of the things, I'm not sure if you pointed out earlier in the show, Chris, the championship is loaded, for listeners who don't know this, with Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday weeks. Right, where teams are playing on Saturday, they're playing again on Tuesday or Wednesday, and then they're playing on Saturday. You have to be, and Bournemouth shows you this. You see the kind of squad Bournemouth is coming up into the Premier League with. They're probably as deep as any squad in the Premier League, believe it or not. Doesn't mean they're as good as anyone in the Premier League. Certainly they're not. But you need that level of depth sometimes to get out of this division, and Millwall doesn't have it.
We mentioned before the teams Norwich and Watford, and we mentioned Burnley in regards to Vincent Kompany. But what we haven't really talked about a lot is Burnley FC themselves. Now, Kartik, with Watford and Burnley and Norwich City, I mean, massive parachute payments that they get from the Premier League as they drop down from the Premier League to the Championship. What's your take on Burnley in terms of, you mean, there's parachute payments available, so they're going to have a lot more money to spend than other clubs in the Championship. What's your take on Burnley? Do you think they'll spend this money and get some key players in? Because they've lost a few, right?
Yeah, and at this point, it doesn't look like they're going to spend anything and that they're going to lose a few more. So hopefully they hold on to Brownhill. I think he is the key. Ashley Barnes is at the age now where he won't move, but could have a few years ago if they've been relegated. I think Dwight McNeil and Cornet probably both move on and go back to the Premier League or to first, maybe Cornet goes to a first division somewhere else. I can certainly see Dwight McNeil going to would be a great signing for actually Fulham or Bournemouth. or Forrest. Charlie Taylor is a guy I think they might lose also. So on paper right now, if you look at the Burnley squad, you say, yeah, they should come back up. Connor Roberts is a guy that will be there. I think he'll stay. Lowton maybe stays. Ashley Westwood maybe stays. But all these guys could move. The only players of significance they brought in have been players connected to Manchester City. Murick, Egan Riley, and Harwood Bellis because of Vincent Kompany. My understanding is there might be one or two more. Kompany has a great relationship with Pep and the brass at Manchester City for obvious reasons, right? Was the captain of that squad for a decade. But in terms of them actually giving Kompany a checkbook to go out and buy guys that are accomplished championship players that can help get them out of this division, I don't think that's happening. And I think you're going to see the likes of Charlie Taylor and Dwight McNeil and Cornet and maybe Westwood also move on. And that would be devastating.
Yeah, and they've already lost this summer James Tarkowski and Ben Mee, who have moved on from Burnley. One of the things, Kartik, as a fan of a club in the
Which is good, honestly, because I didn't want to see either of those two guys in the championship. No offense, but I'm glad they're both still in the Premier League.
Yeah, definitely higher quality there. So one of the things I love to do as a fan of a club in the championship is oftentimes during the season, look at the league table and go, okay, hey, we're like, if we get another win, that's going to jump us up into the playoff spots. If we get and then we get a win midweek and hope that the other teams lose, we could be in, you know, like fourth place, maybe third place. It's amazing watching the championship, whether you're a fan of a club or not, how that league changes in terms of teams moving up and down the table. It seems that some clubs, Coventry is one example, going up, kind of you're looking at them going up the table and then all of a sudden dropping back down again within the same table, whatever club it may be. But it is a league that's so tight in terms of number of points that you could have a good run of form towards the end of the season and get you into the playoff spots. And then once you're in the playoffs, you mean, then hope springs internal, thinking that you mean maybe you'll win the playoff semifinals and go all the way to the final and get promoted to the Premier League. But what about Coventry City, Kartik? Yeah. That's a club that's kind of fluctuated up and down the table a lot.
Yeah, and they I think, are ready to make their move. They're deep enough. They're now experienced enough. Mark Robbins has a system in place there. They actually have they're actually back in their ground, right? They're actually playing in Coventry, right? This was a great intrigue, right? They built when they were still in the Premier League or towards the end of their Premier League time. And by the way, for those who don't know, Coventry City had, when they were relegated to the championship in 2002 or 2003, sometime around then, they had the longest run in the Premier League outside, at the time, outside of Arsenal and Everton and Liverpool. So outside of those three clubs. So they were a fixture in the first division, have not been back yet, and things kind of spiral out of control. They built a stadium, then they lost control of the stadium, then they even weren't able to pay the lease at the stadium. They ended up playing in Northampton, which is might as well be in another country, right? It feels like it's that far away. I think it's only about 50 miles, but still, it feels like that. Then they had to ground share with Birmingham City. Now they're back in their arena, and Mark Robbins has gotten them to a point where they're now deep enough and experienced enough with this team, and there's been a lot of continuity in the squad, a lot of the same parts now for a couple of years, that including getting promoted from League One, that I think they are ready to make their move. Will they make it to the top six? I'm not sure, but if they don't, I think they're going to be right on the outside. So they're that club. You just described it, Chris. They're the club that might be in 12th, and then they get two results during a week, and they're in fourth. I think they're going to be hovering around the playoff places all season.
It's hard for me to be unbiased about Cardiff City, my hated rival as a Swansea City fan. And just a reminder for listeners too, last season was the first time in the history of Swansea against Cardiff in the league that either Swansea or Cardiff had completed the double. And it was Swansea getting both the home and away victories against Cardiff. But it's hard for me to be unbiased about Cardiff just because I despise them so much. I think they're definitely lacking in youth talent, in the youth system, in the youth academy, and that's hurt them long term. But Kartik, you probably know more about Cardiff City than I do. I tend to stay away from reading about them. I'm not interested in them, but I just like to beat them. But what about you? What do you know about Cardiff City this season?
Yeah, Steve Morrison has his His work cut out for him. Obviously, player that we best associate, I think, probably with Norwich and Millwall. This is his first stint as a manager, and they've got in Joe Rawls a player that I've liked for years that I wish maybe we had seen on a higher level. Romain Sayers, they've signed a player that helped Brentford build and obviously playing the Premier League with West Brom. But they have a lot of holes. I think a lot of guys that have gone through maybe their cycle with the club or their cycle in the Championship. So with that in mind, they've gone out and gotten a bunch of guys this summer. Sayers is one of them. There are several others. I think they'll probably be safe, but it wouldn't shock me if they were sucked into a relegation battle.
And then Wigan Athletic is an interesting one, Kartik, because I think last season they were in a lot of financial issues, but they did get promoted from League One to the Championship. What's your take on Wigan for this season? Is this a relegation candidate or perhaps maybe there's a new lease of life?
Yeah, they're definitely a relegation candidate. They of course, 2 seasons ago were relegated from the Championship, even though they ended the last day of the season, like 13th in the table. But they got a points deduction that they knew they were getting, by the way, and they went down. I guess that was now probably 3 seasons ago, right? That was the COVID year.
Yep.
But they were unfortunate for the players that way. They've come back up with a much more efficient squad, a smaller squad, but a squad that has in guys like Joe Bennett and James McLean, player I think everybody's familiar with, Ben Amos, and a few other guys. Will Keane is there now, I think, still. And Tom Naylor is also still there. They have a couple of guys that really have been through these battles before. So I think they have a fighting chance of staying up, but they don't have much money anymore. They don't have a deep squad. They're going to have to rely on the resourcefulness of those experienced players.
And Bristol City has a familiar manager, Nigel Pearson, former manager of Leicester City. He was there last season too at Bristol, I remember. But Bristol seems to be one of those teams that I think there is expectations, but oftentimes it underwhelms and kind of goes under the radar a little bit. But what about this season, Kartik? Could this be any different?
Yeah, and I think there was one season that they had a cup run. That really cost them a chance of getting into the playoffs. I'm trying to remember what season that was. It was a few years ago, but they've had a squad that is needed some refreshment and now has gotten it. Nigel Pearson has brought in 2 guys in the last year that he's familiar with from Leicester. 2 of the guys he built with at Leicester, Andy King and Matty James. So and guys who helped get Leicester out of this division. And into the Premier League, and of course, both were on the title-winning team at Leicester, a Premier League-winning team, and I think probably one of them was still around when they won the FA Cup. So I think they're a mid-table team, or they're a low mid-table team. They're not going to get relegated. They're not going to get promoted, and that's kind of what they are.
Last but not least, Blackpool FC under new head coach Michael Appleton. And Michael, I give a lot of positive thoughts in terms of, like, as a manager, a lot of respect as a manager. Do you agree, Kartik, or do you think this is going to be a difficult challenge here?
Well, he of course managed a very different Blackpool back in the day, right? When he managed Blackpool the first time, he took over a team that had been in the Premier League recently, had just missed out on promotion, and I thought did okay with them as the finances were really sinking under the Oyston family. He has had some stints elsewhere since, right? I mean, he didn't do such a good job at Blackburn, but I thought he did a really, really good job at Lincoln City, his most recent job, which got him back on the radar after maybe the failure at Blackburn. He was somewhere else also in between and didn't do so well. But I like him as a manager. I think he's a guy who's gotten better as a manager through the years. Blackpool has a stingy squad that can beat some people on a given day. They're not going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to have enough to stay in the division. And it's great that they're back in the division. They had so many. Talk about a club with financial problems and financial, I wouldn't say financial mismanagement. It was a stingy ownership that didn't want to invest in the club. Blackpool supporters have been through it. They've been through the ringer with that ownership. So it's a new day for them. under new owners the last couple of years. And they have a fairly deep squad. And last season, they seemed to get results against top teams. So they were very, very good against QPR Blackburn, who were in the top six most of the season. And then against the Middlesbroughs and the Forests and the Lutons, et cetera, the teams pushing for promotion. So I think that they'll be decent.
All right, before we go to my last and final question, which is a good one, I think, and I think listeners will appreciate this one. Before we go to that, Kartik, any other final thoughts about the championship for listeners, or any information that you want to share that we haven't covered, because we've covered all 24 teams?
Yeah, I think the most interesting aspect of some of the conversations I've had on TalkSport in the last 6 months especially has been this feeling that clubs that have recently been in the Premier League now have such a huge financial advantage over clubs that haven't been due to the parachute payment structure and due to the Premier League's lack of generosity in terms of giving money down the pyramid in England, that you almost have two divisions opening up. And when you think about this season, I think every club that we're talking about potentially being promoted, with the exception of maybe outsiders like Coventry and Millwall, who we think Preston may be able to crash that top six, every other club we're talking about has been in the Premier League in the last few years. So that's a real concern for the division's health long term. And that's something we're going to continue to have to track.
Yeah, last season especially, I thought that Bournemouth and Fulham in particular, those two teams were basically in another league in terms of the amount of resources they had, the player depth, the money they had to spend, and also even in terms of the power that they had, being able to take a player like Ethan Laird, who was on loan at Swansea, and then Bournemouth talking to Manchester United, convincing Man United to move him on loan to Bournemouth, even though they had such a huge squad, and even though he didn't play that much for Bournemouth because he had so much depth.
Let me point that out, that specific situation, Chris, and the January window for Bournemouth. I don't like the way Bournemouth did business in January. I felt like they were pushing their weight around the same way big clubs push their weight around in top divisions around Europe. And we hadn't really seen that in the championship. And we hadn't seen a team that had 30 players, 30 first-team players. Like I said, I don't know how Bournemouth's going to name 25 guys to their Premier League squad unless they sell some guys in the next couple of weeks. So that's a disturbing development in the championship. It's the first time we really saw it. The Laird situation in particular typified it. So I hope we don't see more of it, but unfortunately, I think we will.
So this season, though, Kartik, it might be a little bit different. So you talk about the big teams coming down with those parachute payments. You already mentioned Burnley and thought that maybe they're not going to use much of that parachute payment to buy players. They've got massive financial issues there at that club. And then you've got Watford and Norwich. Norwich has not been spending a lot of money. They do have a lot of good players in their academy and within the squad. Watford, with a younger manager, a new manager, may not go on the transfer binge, buying a whole bunch of top-level players, may try to kind of cultivate and kind of take the players that they have with some additional key signings and build from there. So maybe this season, Kartik, maybe we won't have those giant clubs from the Premier League coming down and monopolizing the actual championship. Or maybe not. What do you think?
Well, I think I've just refreshed my own memory. Middlesbrough, it's been a few years since they've been out of the Premier League. But otherwise, it's clubs that have either been in the Premier League recently, like Sheffield United and West Brom, or the teams coming straight down. I'm not necessarily saying it's the teams that have just come down, but it's teams that still are getting parachute payments for a couple seasons. Sheffield United would fit that category this season, as would West Brom.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also those clubs have some big supporter bases too. So Sheffield United is going to pack far more fans in that stadium than, say, I don't know, a Wigan or a team with a smaller stadium. So my last question, Kartik, is one that I'm going to throw at you. What about viewing tips? So it's a long season. We've already talked about ESPN Plus and iFollow, but with ESPN Plus, you can get to see most of the games. You'll see about 3 to 4 games a weekend. Hopefully, if this deal is signed, which is ridiculous that it's down to the last minute, but hopefully this deal is signed, 3 to 4 games a weekend, sometimes more, sometimes less. But what's your view and tips? Because a lot of these games are happening at the same time as the Premier League and the Bundesliga and other leagues from around Europe. What's your view and tips on how to get the best out of watching the championship for listeners?
My view and tip doesn't necessarily involve watching live matches because it's impossible, and most of the kickoffs are simultaneous, and you would have to buy iFollow accounts for every club. It's impossible. But I found on YouTube in particular, club fan channels exist. And between that and the EFL channel itself and a Sky Sports channel, you get enough news, highlights, conversation about these clubs to really kind of keep up with the league. It's not as difficult as it may appear. And again, you get 3-4 matches on ESPN Plus each match day. And I'll concede, I'm a person who, I think we've talked about this on this podcast previously, Chris, I generally don't watch the Champions League group stages, the UEFA Champions League group stages. I'm just not a fan. So that's a personal preference. It doesn't mean I hate CBS or hate UEFA or any of that. It's just a personal preference. So I am able to keep up with the championship maybe more easily than other people because I generally then focus on the championship midweek. Every time there's a Champions League match day, there's also a championship match day. That's a lot of time, a lot of when they get their midweek fixtures in because there'll be no domestic cups where they're having to face Premier League sides. So that's the other tip. Maybe if you're not hot on the Champions League, there's no issue with Europa League because that's Thursday. These matches would be Tuesday, Wednesday. If you're not hot on the UEFA Champions League, watch the championship instead.
That's a good point, Kartik, because oftentimes last season and the season before, I'd be watching Swansea City on a Tuesday or Wednesday, 2:45 Eastern kickoff. And then at the same time that Liverpool would be playing, I don't know, Real Madrid or whoever it would be. So I'd often have like two or three screens open just to be able to watch, keep an eye on the Champions League game, but also watching the Swansea championship match. And sometimes there'd be a third screen for another Champions League game happening at the same time. So it is a challenge. My viewing tip would be to, because the English Championship is not the most publicized league in terms of coverage, I think it's easier to avoid any spoilers. So with ESPN Plus especially, they do a really good job of making the games available on demand. So pretty soon thereafter the game ends, you'll be able to watch it from the beginning. And it's unlikely that you're going to know what the score is ahead of time unless you go actively searching for it. Or if you're even following a whole bunch of your club's channels or your club's journalists, etc. So it's easier to avoid. So it's easier to go ahead. Like for me, for example, for a weekend, I might go away for a weekend with my family and then I'll come back later that night. And then I have no idea what the result of the Swansea game is. But I'll sit down, watch it from the very beginning as if it's live. And we'll enjoy it and not have to fear being spoiled. So that's my view and tip too, especially with so many leagues, so many games, so many choices available, is that you can go ahead and watch it on demand and enjoy it. The other thing about the championship, one more thing before we go, Kartik, is that it is a league that sometimes is, some of the games are very tight. Some of the games, like don't be surprised if you get like a really tight, like 0-0 or 1-0. 1-0 especially, you'll see a lot of tight 1-0 games where the team with the leads winning 1-0 is just it's basically shut down, right? Very pragmatic, holding on to that league, and they're just inching closer and closer to that 90th minute mark, trying to get those 3 points because they're looking ahead, trying to maximize or trying to minimize kind of the expenditure of athleticism. So they don't want to overspend in terms of how much, because they're playing three times a week sometimes. They don't want to go hell for leather for 90 minutes and win like 4-0 when they could hold on for a 1-0 and then inch closer to that midweek game. It might be an away game, might be at the other end of the country, and then save themselves for that game so that they can go into that game fresher. So, but there are some wild games, Kartik. You get some 4-3s, 3-3s. I remember a Luton-Swansea game last season that was, I think Luton was winning was it 4-0 and Swansea came back to tie it 4-4 or win it 5-4? There's some really crazy, crazy games back and forth. But for the most part, it is interesting because there is, to me, it's some of these games are really, really tight, really, really kind of like a slow burn, really fun to watch. All right, listeners, so thank you so much for listening to this championship preview of the 2022-23 season. We have the schedule at worldsoccertalk.com, which is updated daily as soon as we get the information, oftentimes before ESPN announces the schedule themselves, before they make it publicly available. And also, of course, we've got the website with tons of other information, articles, etc. We also have our predictions of who will get promoted from the championship for the 2022-23 season. It's always difficult with the championship because it is so wide open. And even Kartik and I, who have published our list, our predictions, even 24 hours later, actually 12 hours later, we're kind of second-guessing themselves, thinking like, oh, maybe we should have put that team here or that team there.
Right, exactly. and with the transfer window open until really almost mid-September, it gets even more complicated this year.
That's the big caveat, right? Because there's going to be a lot of transfer activity this summer, and we're expecting a lot of loan moves, a lot of players. I mean, there's some big players at big clubs that need to be loaned out, and oftentimes they find themselves in the championship. And that's another thing, too. So whether it's seeing Nico Williams play at Fulham, or some of these top-level Premier League players who are a little bit younger, who may not have the opportunity to play week in, week out in the Premier League, get loaned down to a club in the Championship, and there you get to see him play week in, week out, and really see what that player is made of. And numerous examples on that one, too, where you get to see some great talent. So, listeners, thank you for listening. We really, really appreciate your time listening to this championship schedule. We will be back next week with a preview of the English Premier League, and we'll go through all 20 teams, giving some insights. And we hope also to, in the near future, to go ahead and do some previews also for some of the other leagues too, including the Bundesliga and others. So if you like this show, share it with your friends and give us a review on iTunes or Apple Music or Google Play. And Kartik, thank you so much for being on the show. And what should they do?
Enjoy your football.